Today on this episode of Webcomics Weekly, we answer your emails, what to do when people just don't get your jokes, giving your strip away for free to college papers, and as always, our tips and tricks. This is all on Webcomics Weekly number 2, I Don't Get It.
Wait, let's start thinking of topics. Oh, you know what? Hold on a second. It's perfect. We got an email.
I have an email.
Yeah.
We're recording now, by the way.
Alrighty.
Welcome to the second episode of Webcomics Weekly. We should really have an official way to start this. All right.
A little intro.
Here we go.
You know what? How about a four-man a cappella like barbershop?
Webcomics Weekly.
You guys going to leave me with the castrato? Come on.
Hello, my little Webcomics Weekly. Hello, my Webcomics Weekly.
On the panel, as always, the way it's always been for this last two shows, Smilin' Dave Kellett, SheldonComics.com.
Hey-o.
Battlin' Brad Geiger over at Evil-Comic.com.
Hello.
And Crass Chris Straub. Is it Straub or Straub?
No, I like Straub.
Straub. Like my grandmother says, it's Straub.
Yeah, I don't like Straub as much. They're both correct, but I prefer Straub.
According to my German grandmother, it's Straub.
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 Over at starslipcrisis.com. And we are Webcomics Weekly.
Yeah, jazz hands. So
all right.
Do we just want to hop into the questions that we got?
Do you want to go straight to the mailbag?
I think we'll be able to find enough there to go for 45
minutes. I wish I had prepared a stinger. Webcomics mailbag.
Mailbag.
Are you talking about the same guy that I'm talking about from Tyler?
No.
Oh!
Maybe we've got more than one.
All right. So,
we've got different mail.
All
right. Let me read Tyler's question then.
Okay.
His name's Tyler. What?
No, it's like when the question would be great if it's like, I have a mole located on my head.
Okay, first question from Tyler. I don't think he would be upset if I plugged his website.
I don't think he'd be upset.
Natural20s.com.
Okay.
I have some questions about running a webcomic that you four could address in your podcast. First of all, how often do you hear people say, I don't get it? He goes, I get that a little more than I want, and I was wondering if it's common.
That's tough. You know what we should do, though? If we were all sitting in front of a computer, let's go to his website and think about why people say that about his trip.
Do we really want to do that?
Well,
all right. No, that's probably mean.
Hey, no. You know what? I just hit it. I like the art.
It's well drawn.
It is well drawn.
Oh, man. It's a little vulgar, though.
Oops. All right. Let's start over. I'll cut this part out. All right. So, guys, mailbag.
Ask us another question.
Tyler's written in and he has a question. How often do you hear people say, I don't get it? Because it's happening to Tyler a little more often than he'd like. And that is an interesting question because there is nothing more devastating then when you craft what in your mind is the perfect joke and nobody gets it.
I think that's really strip dependent, though, because I would expect that a lot of people would read Starslip and go, what? I do not get it. But those people probably walk away. Those people probably just go, meh, all right, I guess it's not my thing, and go, you know?
I think this question can lead into a whole topic of discussion.
Well,
how funny is too funny?
I think when you're this goes back to the writing humor section, I think, and that is, I think what you're trying to do when you're making a joke is to give them just enough to reach the punchline, but not too much that you telegraph it and give it away. And I think if you're getting a whole lot of I don't get it, you've got to go back and take a look at how you are writing that punchline, how you are setting up to that punchline, and asking yourself if you're either not giving them enough or whether you're giving them too much in the setup, or whether you're crafting your punchlines incorrectly.
That's a good. You know what, Brad? And oftentimes, if you go back and look at it, sometimes it's just that the setup is missing one key word that would have broadcast just a little bit better where you're headed. Because sometimes all, you know, so much of the joke, like you said last week, is the tension and release. And if you're missing that word, sometimes you miss that bit of tension that gets you to the joke, you know.
Or you might be using a word that's ambiguous, and you're using a word that is sending people down the wrong path, and you just have to focus your words more closely.
That's true. And, you know, sometimes it's very, like Chris was saying, sometimes it's topic specific, and you have to just accept that if you make a joke about, you know, Inuit languages and their transformation over the 20th century,
you have to
understand that 90% of people are going to go, huh? And then, you know, you'll have 10 people that are rolling on the floor. But if you make a joke about World of Warcraft, there's going to be 80% of the people that get it, and 20% of the people that have never played the game, they're going to be like, well, I don't know what that is about, you know? So topic-specific stuff, you just have to accept that you're always going to lose a percentage of your audience. But if you're getting it on day-to-day jokes about, like, coffee or sitting in a chair, then you know your writing is in trouble and needs to be tweaked a little bit. You know?
Yeah, I guess the interesting point about the question is, are we discussing, you know, topic or what you're aiming at? Because you know, I made a choice a long time ago with PvP to avoid doing so much humor that was niche oriented and do stuff that was more broad. And you know, you can definitely go through the archives and see where I hit this crossroads and decided that I was going to take a left instead of a right and veer away from a penny arcade type strip where I try to do more broad humor that is flavored into pop culture and video games, and try to be more broad. And so what ends up happening is you get a lot of people that miss the old stuff. But and that the interesting question I think about this is, don't you guys feel, I know that I do, when you're writing a joke, when you're writing a strip, that you are chasing that, that's the high almost that you're trying to recapture with your strip is getting a really big reaction, a really big, you know, that email. It's like, oh my gosh, today's strip had me rolling. You know,
you made me spit coffee at my screen.
Yeah, you're chasing that. You're chasing that, and it's don't you guys feel that sometimes you hit this dilemma of
there's no way to pull that out,
taking the easy way out? Because I think there's an opportunity sometimes to do really clever humor, but you maybe go a little broader because you're chasing. I mean, that's a real fear for me, is to put up a strip that does not get any kind of a reaction. And I think I become a little bit of a slave to that, is chasing that high.
You guys are writing kind of different strips, too, or for me anyway, because I don't necessarily chase that high. I end up with it by accident a lot of the time. I'll write something that I think is kind of a throwaway, but apparently it's so organic and real that resonated, and that's the strip that I was like, you know what, I don't think I want to do that one, but then I'm glad I did it.
I've been there so many times. I've posted one and I'm like, I'm kind of like whipping myself because it's like, oh man, Geiger, you just phoned that one in, you know. And then I get look at my email, and I've got, you know, 10 emails from people saying, that was great, I love that you made me spit coffee at my screen.
That is so
and
frustrating.
And then the very next day, I'll have one that I'm sitting back and I'm saying, Geiger, you've done it again. This is brilliant. You know, you light up that imaginary cigar like Thurston Howell, and you say, you know, you're at the top of your game, and you look at your inbox, and you've got crickets. Nothing at all.
Yeah.
And you go the whole day without hearing anything, and that's the worst in the whole world.
I find that to be very true sometimes, is that you'll the one that you dash off in 30 minutes, and sometimes for better or for worse, but you dash it off in 30 minutes or whatever, and that one for some reason hits comic gold, and I often wonder to myself if I over-edit from the initial concept when that happens, you know? Because when I'm either pressed for time, when for whatever reason I crank one out, you know, and not half an hour, but if I crank one out in an hour and a half or something.
Now you had something with that idea that if you go back and you modify the wording and you rework, you lose some of the dynamic that
right.
made it work in the first place.
And that's why I think, Brad, you might be getting those, and I get them certainly. When you get the emails from the dashed off ones, maybe that's the problem, is maybe we're over editing, you know.
But now, are we giving people conflicting advice, because what we're saying in the early part of the show is, hey, you got to really work on your editing. You've got to choose your words correct, you know, very, very concisely and carefully. And it's been, 10 minutes, and now we're telling people, you know, don't get too involved in editing.
Well, I think that it has to do with advice. It has to do with being concise, though. I mean, the original joke, if it was rambling, and it probably still wouldn't work.
Also, right. I think we're talking about capturing lightning in a bottle here. I don't know that there is one right answer to it. And there's so many different subgenres of humor. And I think what we're all trying to do is what we're discussing here is the hook, is hooking that person into caring and liking the strip.
Right.
And two of the biggest things in my comic in the last 10 years have been happy accidents. And weren't intended. My brother and I, the panda attack came from a stupid video my brother and I saw on a Fox show, and Angie, my wife, told me not to do the strip, that it was dumb. I mean, it really was out of nowhere. In the middle of a storyline, I had a panda attack Brent, and I said to her, look, I understand that this joke is just for me and Brian and no one's going to get it, but I want to do it, so I'm taking it. And it turned into one of the biggest running gags of the series because it worked. There was no reason that should have worked. And then the other thing is the character of Scratch, who was a throwaway character, and there was such a huge response to him. I don't know. There is a kind of balance between planning and also allowing for happy accidents.
Yeah.
Right.
But right. You know, I did a strip about this problem because it happened in real life. My wife had a box of Cheez-Its. Do you know what that snack is?
Yeah.
And where the box is just basically a picture of the cracker, but there's a huge logo that says Cheez It. And I took a Sharpie and I wrote the cops under the logo. And I thought that, I mean, talk about patting yourself on the back and lighting the cigar. I had it set up prompt so she could promptly see. I was so proud of that. And when she just thought it was dumb, I was offended. Like, how the brilliance of Cheez It the cops. Come on. How could you not recognize that?
And then she's like, well, it says Cheez-Its, so it doesn't work. Cheez-Its to the cops. That doesn't work. Doesn't quite work. Can I give a very specific piece of advice to the guy who wrote the email in?
Go for it.
Because I'm looking at his webcomic, and I like his art, and the jokes are, they're not bad. They're pretty good. But the thing that's losing me is that the expressions on the characters' faces are not bold enough. They don't sell me. So when somebody in the last panel is reacting very angrily to something somebody else said, the expression on his face is very mild. All the expressions on their faces are mild. And I think that's where I'm getting lost. You know what I mean?
I can see that.
The emotion is not coming through. When somebody is mad and they're saying, hell no, do you draw their eyebrows furrowed and you draw him pointing and spitting, you know?
Yeah.
If he's that upset, I think that's where I'm getting lost on this one.
Dave, I'd like to hear you talk about this, because this is something I think is a particular strength of that you exhibit.
As far as over-exaggerating?
Not over-exaggeration, but emotive expression.
Well, I think, you know, we've all heard the term before that a cartoonist is like, if it was all the parts of a play, we are the writer, the director, the actors. You know, you can stage this exactly. It's the play exactly as you would want it to be in some perfect world of theater. And for me, if you take as a given that you can pose and express and do all these characters exactly as you want it, both as director and as actor, you have to say, like, you know, can I actually trim three or four words off the punchline or off the setup by letting the character's face communicate that, or letting even sometimes, and I don't do this enough, but if you look at like Calvin and Hobbes or at Pogo and some of the other more lush strips, you actually let the environment communicate what's happening. And we were talking a little bit about that the other day with silhouettes, is that, you know, a lighting choice can help communicate the mood and the expression that you want to express. And I don't do that as well as I should, but I tend to go, I mean, sometimes sort of over the top with my expressions, just speaking personally. But I think it works for the theme and the tone of the strip, that sort of Tex Avery big eye approach sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I think though that if you have the choice though in cartoons, like Chris was saying, don't just use a stock pose. Let that expression be some of the unspoken words, just like it is in human communication, where you know your eyebrows are saying more than the words coming out of your mouth are saying.
I'm so trying to learn that. I'm so trying to adopt that, especially recently. And it's difficult because I design characters that have no eyes. Brent is so difficult. I can't even have Brent looking in a direction.
Right, you've got to get the whole body turned, don't you?
And he doesn't even have a real body. He's kind of a Q-tip with shades. I wish I had designed him better when I started out, but I'm stuck with him.
What are you going to do?
I guess I'm just going to laugh all the way to the bank. What? I don't know. Fake it.
Keep making
to fake
gold.
It.
We got another question?
He did have two more questions. We can determine if we want to use them. The second question was, do you have any suggestions about getting known without spending money?
That one's easy. Just communities.
It's not as easy as I think it used to be.
It might not be. Because it requires a big investment on your part to get into those communities, because nobody wants you to go in and go, hey, guys, look at this. You'll be booted immediately.
Right.
In other words, you'd have to become an actual participating member in that community, and you're the only thing that says, oh, and by the way, look at my comic is in your signature, which requires an investment of time. But besides that, I don't know how else you can do it. I guess you could send fan art to other web comics and see if they'll run it and give you a link. And bribe them with a little art.
I got to tell you, I really hope you guys have suggestions on this, because the way that I did it when I started out doesn't exist anymore. I just think there's too many webcomics. I don't think you can do a strip about Diablo and hit a Diablo website and say, I did a webcomic about this. Because I think back then it was more of a novelty that
right.
someone did a comic about a topic that a certain community cared about.
Yeah.
And I just don't know how to advise people on this any longer to get the free networking and publicity. I used to say getting people to your website is easy. It's getting them to come back that's hard. But I really don't know what to tell people anymore as to the first part. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, guys?
It's tough. It's definitely hard to say to someone who has four readers, how do you get to 8, and then how do you get to 16, and then how do you get to 100? That's the toughest stage right there. Once you get to 100, then you know you can get to 1,000. And once you get to 1,000, then you know you can get to 10,000, if that makes sense. But it's that first, like, initial trickle into the well that's so hard to do. And for that, my only advice, and this is going to sound hokey, but my advice is be nice to everyone you approach about the strip or ask to look at the strip. Or I think that's so underrated in life, is that if you're talking to them in personal life, in real life, don't come off either as brash or as falsely humble if it's good. I mean, just be genuine about it and be nice for their time of having looked at it. And that's also true in the online world. So many times I get these emails, and I'm sure you guys get them too, where it's like, here's the link, go to town. And you're like, well, wait a minute, how about a please or a thank you, or you know what I mean? Basic kindnesses are forgotten sometimes.
I don't get those emails. The emails that I get are hey, I know you're very popular and successful, but look at this. Ha ha, pun. Ha, zip, wham. This is my comic strip. It's got tomato zombies from Mars. Woohoo! And it's just like the silly, over-the-top three paragraphs that then there's no sincerity in it, and it's all just silly and designed to get my attention, get the attention of a funny guy, because God knows he probably is never serious at any point in his life. And I don't have the inclination to wade through that and then read it. And it's full of I think that being genuine is really important when you're approaching somebody.
Yeah, and that's why I say be genuine and be nice about it, because I think those two things are very forgotten sometimes. And people, because even an email, if you're nice but it's not genuine, that's going to read. So a cartoonist's inclination to either give you advice, or even your readers that you ask to spread the word, they're going to read that, you know.
I certainly react. That's the only thing I react to now. There's a very popular approach to get me to link to webcomics is to have someone you know approach me with an email that says, I don't know if you saw this, but No Shoes for Tuesday is making a joke about you, and then you go, and it's a horrible joke at my expense. You know, and I think it's obvious the person that's writing me is either the guy or a friend of the guy that drew it in the hopes that I'll be on my website. I don't know what No Shoes for Tuesday thinks he can get away with, but nobody mocks Scott Kurtz that way. Link, you know. although at a time I will admit that certainly did work with me, it's the people that approach me genuinely that really turn my head now. I think that the two cartoonists that I've been the most excited about recently, coincidentally, are girls. I think Danielle Crescetto over at Girls of Slingshot and Spike over at Templar, Arizona.
Yeah, yeah.
The nicest cartoonists. I mean, nicest people on the planet. Like, genuinely excited about it. And it comes through in their emails and in their approach.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? Actually, another thought just occurred to me, and this is going to sound even hokier than my last answer, but the best way to build your audience is to create a better comic strip. And it's as simple as that, really. I think
that's the best advice I think you can give, Dave. I'm right there with you.
That is it's so overlooked from all these people that are like, hey, I've got, you know, a dozen strips up. Why aren't people coming? And the unfortunate and truthful bottom line with comics is that you need 200 strips up, and you need to make each one better than the last one. You need to be learning what works in your writing and what doesn't work in your writing. And if you will hone that, you will be amazed at the viral power of the internet.
I think that if you're really doing something remarkable, it works for you.
I think that's true.
It does the job for you.
And that seems like such an asinine thing to say. You know what I mean? It sounds like, well, I'm here because of my greatness. That's what did it. But
right.
I think that does have a lot to do with it, because when I was doing Checkerboard Nightmare, not that I look back and go, what a great strip, although sometimes I do go back and go, oh, I forgot I wrote that. But I did not do any advertising for it, and it steadily collected readers. And I think it was just because it was done good.
Well, and I think so many people, I don't know if you guys have gotten this email, but it's like, look, I have a new webcomic, and I wanted to get your opinion on how to open a store and set up T-shirt sales. And you go and look at their site, and they've done three strips. You know, it's a lot of people putting the cart before the horse.
Yeah, there's a website they're advertising on. I don't remember what website, but I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. And I went there, and it was a splash page. And there was forums and all this other stuff. But I'm not going to ever go back. I don't care. If they had done 10, I might have come back. But now, no.
Right. No, you're right.
So, yeah.
So the answer to his question is, the magic was inside you all along. The secret to getting people to come to your site for free is love. Love for the craft.
Oh, well, you know what? And that actually, you know what? You just raised a good point in terms of getting the people to come to the site for free. Is that there is an infinite variety of free things on the internet, and the way you get people to come back, if you've ever gotten them to come once, is A, you have the quality product on there, and B, you're consistent with your update times. So both professionalism in your work and the professionalism in the updates that you exhibit. You have to have, if you say there's going to be three up a week, by God, you better have three up a week, or you just lost me when I come back on Thursday and it's not there, you know? So it's a holistic approach to professionalism that you have to adopt, both in the quality of the work, in the professionalism that you exhibit in your personal emails and interactions, and in the times that you keep to your update schedule.
And so just a quick point about web design on there as well. How many times have you guys gone to a new website and with the idea, okay, I'm going to check out this new comic? You get to the new website, you can't find a comic anywhere.
Oh, that is awful.
Yeah.
You've got to make that comic if you're going to do a website, if you're going to do a comic-based website, that comic has got to be the first thing people see when they come to your site. Otherwise, you're running against yourself.
Yeah.
What have I always said to you when you're designing a site?
I don't remember.
The strip is the star.
Oh, well, yeah, but I thought it was a more specific note. Oh, you know what? You said, it's like, make sure the webcomic is on there. No, you told me, because I redesigned Starslip recently, and you're like, hey, are you drawing it bigger? And I said, no, it's the same size it's always been. You said, well, then you designed it right, because
I thought it was bigger.
Yeah.
I thought it was bigger when you redesigned the site. And that's because you made the strip the star of your website, the focus. I think I said that to you when you were working on Dave's site.
How big he was planning on
it? He was getting conflicting advice, and I was like, no, strip needs to be at the top, needs to be the first thing. I mean, of course, an ad above it, because you to sell advertising, it needs to be the first thing. But then that after that, after a logo and the ad, the first thing is the strip, period. I mean, that's always been my opinion. I say it as if it's gospel, but the gospel according to Scott, am I right?
And you know what? There's nothing wrong with putting that ad up at the very top, just to take that on a tangent, because since every website or almost every website that's based on commerce has that ad at the top, I think we've kind of trained ourselves as web readers to look past that and jump down a certain number of pixels to see the actual content. You're not actually giving up any space up there. Most people are skipping over that space anyway, and if you do put something meaningful up there, a lot of times it gets lost.
You know what? That's just the reality of doing business with online advertising. They call it a leaderboard ad for a reason. It's a standard, and you're not going to sell it if it's not you can sell some ads that are above the fold, but the leaderboard ad is always at the top, and you know that's just a reality of it. But you know, it might be something that these advertisers might learn that I think you're right, Brad. I think people do have trained themselves to ignore the leaderboard ads, and that I think that maybe a leaderboard ad below the strip might actually be more effective.
I don't know. I have to look into it. All I know is that as long as it's above the fold, then you should be in good shape.
I have a question.
Yeah, yes.
About webcomics.
Yeah.
That I would like to pose to this panel.
Okay.
I've seen this on David's site, and now I'm seeing it on Brad's. Click here to get Evil Incorporated in your college newspaper for free.
Yeah.
What are you guys doing in ways of facilitating that when someone does call you?
The way I do it is that I just provide them with a login for a section that has high-res downloads. And so that gets them – right now I'm just doing it about 300 DPI. And basically – and here's the idea for me is that one of the reasons why I give it to college newspapers for free is that it's the same reason why Philip Morris targets young smokers.
Because you want to murder children?
Yes, exactly, because I'm an evil corporation that makes tons of cash. No, but the thing is, college papers don't have a lot of funding. So is it worth it to me to charge them the $5 a week that, you know, that's going to break their bank and doesn't make any difference to me? No, not at all. So I might as well give it to them for free. And then also, it's a great thing to get the strip out there in front of college readers who let's be honest, have some downtime, because I remember my college days and downtime.
I look at it like this.
Well, I want to do it myself, but my question to you is this. I mean, do you have a system that automatically – I mean, how far back in your archives are you going? How often – how many strips are you offering them at any given time?
I try to keep it to the last 15 or 20. That way, if they're a 5 day a week student newspaper, which most are, or sometimes it's once a week. But the most a student newspaper is going to go for the most part, I think, is five. UCLA had five, right, Chris?
Five what? Strips?
Five. Bruins.
It ran 5 days a week.
Oh yeah, you could put one in there 5 days a week. But typically they divvied it up though and gave it to five or six different cartoonists.
Like both, I think most big schools, like I went to Notre Dame and they had a 5 day a week. And I don't think anybody goes over 7 days a week. So what I do, Scott, is I give them all 7 days a week and then I give them the last couple of weeks in that folder. That way, if any editor has any particular problems with a Sheldon strip, which is unlikely because it's pretty clean, they can go back and pick another one if they want.
So basically, you're just offering a password to a hidden folder with high-res versions of those week's strips or the previous week's strips, and then they can go grab them whenever they need them.
Exactly.
Yep. And it works out really well. I've got I can usually get a good 2 months ahead because I'm going a little bit back in my archives for the ones that appear in print. So I just every month or so I put another couple months in there. They can download them. They like to. I also do business with a couple of newspapers. They usually like to have that stuff about 2 weeks in advance so they can get the pages designed and all that kind of stuff. So having a little bit of lead time is definitely a good thing. But as far as the college papers go, as far as what Dave was saying, that's also what I look at, giving them their strips for free, is that for me, that's a free ad. because underneath each one of those strips is my URL and my email address and all that stuff. And every day that somebody runs my strip, that's just a repeated ad in a place that I know is a good target for people who might enjoy what I do. And I'm going to be bringing those people to my website sooner or later.
No, I agree. I agree with you. How are you guys keeping track of what papers are running it?
Well, they keep track of it on their own. It's the beauty of it.
They're going to be approaching us. The flip side of that is sometimes you don't know when you've been dropped because they just you don't know if they've you don't know if they've stopped picking your strip up or not. So I do know that I've been picked up by a certain number of newspapers, but if they're dropping me, I don't know unless somebody writes me and tells me, hey, I was reading it yesterday and it's not in today.
Yeah, and that's the thing, Scott, for me is that I find that I don't worry about it too much because for me it's all gravy. It's all strips that I've already drawn. It's all strips that they're already going online, which is their main purpose in life, and then into the books eventually. And so if the newspapers that have contacted me run it, great. If they decide not to run Fridays or if they end up not running it at all, well, then so be it.
Here's my concern is that giving it away to a college newspaper is great because for me it's an educational thing. I mean, I know you're providing entertainment, and you're not. It's not being used for educational purposes, but it's an educational institution, and targeting college students with my product, not a bad idea. So it's a win-win. What I'm concerned about is getting an email from someone that says, "Yeah, I'm with the Piccadilly University newspaper. I'd like to sign up for your free strips for the paper," and then all of a sudden it's in. I see that the strip is now being run in. PC game track magazine and how would it
get picked up without you knowing about it?
Because that person told me they were a college paper. Now they're getting high res versions of my strips and they're running it in their magazine without me telling
I see. You know what? I actually hadn't thought about that. That's a very good point. I was going on basic human trust, but you're right. That's
no, I'm not
we're
a cynical.
All,
I'm not a cynical
people,
Scott. I'm not a cynical broken man like you are, Scott.
No, Scott actually makes a really good point, and I genuinely hadn't thought about that, is that it's not entirely unlikely that you could have a magazine that runs only in the UK that you would never see that otherwise would pay 100 to 200 pounds for a strip, and they're like, oh, yeah, we're a college newspaper out of Canterbury, and we'd love to run your strip, and then it turns out...
David, I think for the most part you're safe. And I also think it'd be a great opportunity to forge relationships with those editors.
Mm-hmm.
You know...
Right, if you keep in mind that a lot of these people are going to go on to newspaper jobs and or when newspapers die onto web jobs, they're going to be professionals within 5 years. And
they're contacting you by email, so you're striking up a conversation with them to begin with, right? This isn't an automated deal.
And that's another benefit too, Scott, is that when these people contact you from a college newspaper, it's got the edge you right on the end of the email. So you're not all that suspicious of it, you know?
Well, that's great. I think I'm going to do that, guys. Do you mind if I crib that idea?
No, crib away.
Feel free.
I've actually been doing it, but I make
the... me losing all the papers. I'm like, damn you, PVP.
I make the explicit request that I'm put in the classifieds next to the love is. And that hasn't really worked out very well for me.
I will specifically add into... do you guys have any kind of little contract that you give with it that says it's...
No,
for...
but I think that's a good idea.
Okay.
How about that? I do think that's a good idea.
That they sign and say this is for the paper only and educational purposes only.
Exactly.
And then what I'll add is you can have the strip as long as you do not drop Sheldon, Evil Inc., or Starslip to put it in.
That's true.
Throw Love Is in there, and I think you got a winner.
Hey, you know what? Love is friendship. How about that?
Love Is your comic given away for free to college papers.
So, hey, let's get into the tips for the week.
Yeah, you want to?
Yeah.
Sure, let's wrap it up with some tips.
We're 33 minutes in.
That sounds good. By the time we get done with another 25 minutes of tip talk, we'll be good.
Okay.
Tip talk.
So, tip talk.
Tip talk.
We need, Scott, we need another singer.
Tip talk.
So I will go first this week, if that's cool.
Please.
All right. So my tip, my I don't know why I'm so jonesing to get through this week. But anyway, my tip talks this week are both about character creation. Two things. Chris and I were actually talking about this beforehand, and my general thought is that if you can pick any name in the grand history of human existence for your character, you might as well pick a short name for your character. If you can make it distinctive and make it like Opus, all the better. But one thing that you're going to find over years and years and years of comic strips is that if your character is named C. Montesquieu Montgomery Bartholomew Jones, that is going to be half of your panel by the time you get done writing his name. So there's something wonderful about having a short name. So that's a really quick tip. And then my other tip is that a great way in character design to make sure that your characters are distinctive is to give them all a distinctive silhouette. Like we were talking about last week, is that if you do a silhouette shot and Vanderbeam is filmed 20 feet out with a spotlight on him, you can tell it's Vanderbeam because of that hair lick and because of his stance, you know.
Oh my gosh, that's a good point. Let me think about that with mine.
We were going to do that in the book. Remember?
Oh yeah, we were. And it worked with me.
And it worked. We got that piece of paper around here somewhere.
That's right.
Somewhere. Where you did silhouettes for all your characters. I'm like, that's clearly Skull.
That's clearly Brent.
Yeah.
Yeah, that does work.
So it does work, and that is a good character design tip.
So those are my two character design tips for this week.
I like your naming convention because I guess I followed it myself. And here's a little interesting question about naming. If you ever design create two characters, with the express knowledge that maybe one day they'll end up getting married, make sure that the girl's name is as interesting if she adopts the last name of the character she's marrying.
How so?
Well, because Brent is Brent Sienna, and yeah. I'm very proud of that name because it sounds like Burnt Sienna.
Right.
And Jade is Jade Fontaine, and that rolls off the tongue, Jade Fontaine. But now she's going to be Jade Sienna, and that does not work.
I don't think it's so bad.
What if it's Jade Fontaine Sienna?
Oh, you're going to make me make Jade do that? Oh, no.
Jade Sienna Fontaine?
How about Brent Fontaine?
He sounds like a sports newscaster.
I think I have the subject of today's comic strip.
What happens to their names?
You know what, though? That's a great week's worth of storylines, because I have a lot of girlfriends that complain when they get married about the name that they always either like their name or they hate the name that they might take, and that's a week's worth of stuff right there.
Yeah. But it's really sad now because I'm excited about Brent and Jade being married, but I don't want to give up Jade Fontaine because I took time crafting that.
Now it's gone.
Now it's gone.
Well, it's not that unusual for a professional woman to keep her last name.
That's true.
I know.
It really is not.
Well, what did your wife keep her name?
My wife took my name. I mean, who could pass up Geiger?
Right. And what about you, Dave?
Glow made her last name her first name or middle name, and then took Kellett as her last name.
Oh,
yeah.
But in all her professional writing, though, it's Gloria Calderon Kellett, though.
So her name is still in there.
It's hyphenated.
Exactly.
And I get compliments on the hyphen. That's a line from Uncle Buck. Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
That the girl, Lori Metcalf, played the weird neighbor. And she came in, she goes, I'm divorced, but I kept the name. And I get compliments on the hyphen. All right, who's next with their tip talk?
I've got a relevant tip that I'm actually going to steal from the guy who wrote in to have his question answered. And maybe we'll answer his next week. It's Ray. And his tip was something that bothers me a lot, too. He says,
I know where you're going.
He says, don't get whiny in your news blog. It's extremely tempting to let a breakup, annoying parents, or a stagnant readership get you emotionally and then complain about it publicly, but you can't allow yourself to do that. Your news blog is one of your biggest interfaces to your readers, and if you make yourself out to be less than personable, you're going to exasperate them and drive them away. And I agree 100%. And it's not something that I adhered to often in the past, and I think it's part of the reason why you turned your comments off, Scott. But a lot of people who come to visit your website, that is their first taste of the artist. And if it's like, I've got problems and my mom's yelling at me and all that, I don't want to get involved in that guy's upsetting, sad life, you know, especially not if I'm a new reader and this is my first taste and I'm not invested yet.
Right. I think a lot of cartoonists forget that in the bigger picture, you are an entertainer, and the blog is part of that entertainment. And people don't come to you – I mean, they're sad about their own mother's illness and their mortgage and the problems they're having in their divorce. They don't come to your comic strip to read about your problems with your divorce.
They come to get away from it.
Yeah, exactly. And so for 30 seconds to 2 minutes a day, they're gonna look for a laughter or something to pick them up. And you can't walk away from that fact in your blog and suddenly start talking about how nothing's working out for you in life. You
know? I have adopted a philosophy of I try never to touch on or discuss any of the major tragedies when they happen. When 9/11 went down, the biggest response I got from readers during that period of time was thank you for not doing a strip about it or making a blog post about it. It was nice to just come to your site and read PvP and see that PvP was still going and it was still funny and I could forget about things for a while. And that policy has I don't think has hurt me at all. You know?
What did I sound like, Mr. Bean there?
Agreed. So thanks, Ray, because I had absolutely no idea for a tip.
Well done, Chris. Chris Stroud, professional.
What was Brad's tip?
I got a good one. Well, I've got one that I've trotted out a couple of times at conventions, and people seem to really be amazed by it, so I'll throw it out here. Blue line pencil sketches. A lot of people are familiar with non-photo blue, and they use that to do their sketch with before they do their inking, and that way they can ink directly over top of their pencil sketch. What some people don't realize is that you can also get blue leads for a mechanical pencil. And if you're heavy-handed like I am, and you always wear down a traditional pencil down to a dull nub, after your first stroke across the page, using a mechanical pencil is a godsend because you can always have a nice sharp point on it. And if you go to an office supply store, a lot of times you might have to ask for it directly and or have them order it. But you can find blue leads for a 0.5 millimeter traditional mechanical pencil. And they work great. When you scan them in, the blues drop out when you're scanning in grayscale mode, and you never have to worry about erasing and doing stuff like that.
Huh.
That is
I
awesome.
Put you all to sleep.
No, it's. I was letting you finish because I'm currently holding right now in my hand, and Chris can confirm this, a Kohinoor Rapidomatic 0.9 millimeter pencil with blue line lead in it.
Mm-hmm.
It is... It's difficult to come across, at least it has been in my area, because a lot of people are in areas where there is no official art store. They have to go to like a craft store, like a Michaels.
It is hard
to find it at those places.
Yeah.
But Azel Arts here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area carries it, and I love it.
And a word of caution, I couldn't find any blue lead, and I tried because of Brad doing it at Comic-Con this year. I found red lead.
Uh-oh.
Doesn't work as well.
Red? I don't know why anyone would use it, but I
I like how it looks on a sketch, but for the purpose of not having it reproduce if you're scanning your work, it doesn't work.
A scanner and a copier sees red, it's the same as black.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like there's non-photo blue, and then there's super photo red, and Chris got super photo
well,
red.
There was a machine that was used for scanning, and I forget what it was called. It's on the tip of my tongue, but it used it was exactly flopped. Red would disappear, and so a lot of my political cartoons when I worked at the camera.
Uh-oh.
What happened?
I totally lost everybody.
How'd you lose them?
Do you hear them?
No, they're gone. Hold on, let's bring them back. We can start them back in easy. Call refused. Let's try and bring Brad back in. Oh, here he's calling. Brad, you there?
Okay.
Wow.
You there?
Boy, what did I do?
We
you were offending us.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
I have no idea what happened.
Brad, your points were really boring.
Brad, what were you talking about? Because I think the powers that be didn't want that information to get out, and they tried to end our podcast.
They can't stop the signal.
Stop them! They're going to kill sales of our Super Repo Red pencils. All of a sudden, our podcast disappears, and it's Brad going, so anyway, whatever you do, don't buy blue pencils, non-repo, red, or great. I'm Brad Geiger.
He's just been replaced completely.
Yeah, it's just like,
well, yes, well, I have to go now.
Excuse me, pardon me, I had a frog in my throat. This is Brad Geiger, and red pencils.
This is Brad Guiga.
This is
Guiguar.
Anyway, draw, pip, pip, red pencils, way to go. I'm going to segue from Brad's tip into a technical tip. It is not my tip, but it made me think of it. Over the course of my cartooning career, I've owned many scanners. I know this is impossible if you need to have a really honking 11 by 17 scanner, because I don't know they make one in this way. But if you just have a normal letter-sized scanner, I cannot recommend highly enough more this Canon CanoScan thing I have. And the reason why I'm recommending it is it's the first scanner I've ever owned that stands on its side. It's got a little foot that comes out like a picture frame, and it takes up no desk space. I mean, it is great. Now, you can lay it flat if you want, because sometimes you have books and stuff that won't scan that way. But it opens clamshell, but it stands up on its side like this. You see it, Chris? This is great for the radio. And
the footprint is like
the
edge
nothing.
Of a book.
I mean,
something.
It is up against the wall. I don't even know it's there. It takes up no desk space.
Didn't you say that it was powered from the USB?
It is. It has no power cord,
which is amazing.
It takes power directly from the USB. Now, I've only used it on a Mac. I have not used it on a PC, but it works for both. It is the CanoScan LIDE 600F. But I you know, I mean, it does what any other scanner does, but it I think it was like $110-$120.
Yeah.
And takes up absolutely no space on your desk. It is brilliant. It's flush against my wall, and it's out of my hair.
I'm loving life.
And it's a cheap scanner, and it does the job.
I wish I could use that. That is awesome, because mine is 2 feet by a foot and a half. It's absolutely gigantic, 11 by 17.
Yeah, do you have a Microtech?
Yeah, the Microtech 9800XL.
You have an old German World War II surplus scanner.
I have that 9800XL 11 by 17 scanner is the greatest scanner ever, man.
I love it. Oh, I love it, but it takes up a third of my desk.
It is huge. It is like having a midget on your desk that scans. But it's a workhorse, man. I used mine for, 6 or 7 years, and it finally crapped out on me. But, if you have to use an 11 by 17 scanner, there's no help. Because it just has to be a huge monster. All right, anyway.
And that wasn't your tip.
That was not my tip. That was some product placement. I wish Canon would pay me for that. here's a tip that comes from Scott McCloud's book, Making Comics, which I highly recommend. I was a big fan of Understanding Comics, not so much Reinventing, but Making Comics is awesome. And in that book, it taught me to try something, and it has really opened up, I think, my characters. And that is not being afraid to draw a conversation between two characters where one of the characters, you're looking at them from behind them, you know?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
There?
Yes. And the reason why I never considered doing it is because the way my characters are designed, they're so flat and two-dimensional that I had never figured out how to draw them from behind. But if you look at any PvP strip and a lot of other comics, it's a lot of people standing and talking to each other, not face-to-face. They're almost standing near each other and making sure that three-quarters of their face is always viewable by the audience, almost as if they're in a play. And that's fine. Scott McCloud was cool with that. But he also was talking about how if you draw a character from behind, it invites the reader into the strip, because now you are that character looking in, and it sucks the character, the reader into the strip. And I've been experimenting with it, and I think I've been using it a little too often. You know, I'm like that kid that first discovered Photoshop and added a lens flare and a page curl to everything. Check it out, another page curl. But, you know, like, for example, in the recent storyline where Brent proposed to Jade, it's from behind Jade's head looking down, and Brent's at a different angle. And I didn't have to learn how to draw extra, really, but it really does change. I don't know. It feels like it's opened up the strip for me, and now I just got to find a way to balance it. But I think it's very commonplace for cartoonists to just learn how to draw their characters in a three-quarters view. But doing that larger from behind, really, I think it really helps.
Breaks it up, too.
That's a great tip. I'm going to try that.
It's daunting at first, because now you got to figure out how to... It was daunting for me to figure out how to draw some of my characters from behind. But the another tip to that is, if you can't really figure, like, well, I've never drawn, how am I going to make this part of his hair? Don't worry about it. Let me give you another tip.
Uh-huh.
Silhouette it.
And then it's just the same
stark
view.
Lighting. So all you got to know is really how the edge of his face looks, because you've got the dark lighting behind it. Because what that tells you is that you're the reader, and you're up against the wall in the corner that this character is standing in.
But now, I want my readers to feel like perverts. That's what I want. They need to feel like they're hiding in the room.
Yeah, but the first time I used it was in a recent storyline. I was going to have the strip open with one of my characters in a kind of masterpiece theater leather chair. And holding a book and saying, oh, you're here to hear the story of this. Well, let me start it. And that's how the storyline would start. And I decided what I would do was open it from behind the chair, and he's kind of looking back at you. And I got a lot of compliments on that strip, and I think it's because it gives the impression that you, the reader, are walking in, and he's like, oh, yes, you're here. Sit down. And it's just a little... thing. It's not a big deal, but I really feel like it's really reinvigorated me into being excited about drawing again.
That's great.
So that's my tip. Holy crud, you're right. We went from 30 minutes to 50 minutes, Dave.
Great tips all around.
Great timing.
Is there like a score that pops up above that, like 5,000? Combo breaker.
Boodle-bing! Boodle-bing!
Good move. It's like that dance.
Stay cool.
I used to work in radio, and when you would, they had a big clock. For every song had a countdown. It's called a post count, because it counts down 3 seconds before the song starts playing lyrics. So if the song opens up with music and then words start, you have all that time to finish going, lunch for a bunch this weekend, blah, 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 don't forget the cash cue, blah, 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 blah. And it's like KXYZ. And then the guy goes, you know, everybody, have you heard? You know, but you can sing, and it's called nailing the post. As if you go, if you nail the post, it's like, you know, you go, it's going down, 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 and you're still talking. Then you go KXYZ, and then Journey kicks in. Don't stop. That's called nailing the post. So what Dave did is he just nailed the post. And so it should go ba-ding, nailed the post.
I didn't know that there was a counter. I just assumed that everybody kind of knew when the lyrics would kick in.
Well, they used to be. Well, that was a big thing. Was at the radio station. Is one of our DJs would say, "I remember when we used to have to guess the post on our own, and now it's all computer." But it's a big. I'm not kidding you, dude. It's one monitor. Like, you know, there's a monitor for the weather and a monitor for news. There's just one monitor, and it's just giant numbers. And it's just counting down so you can nail the post. That's how important it is.
If there's like an instrumental, are you allowed to talk all the way through it?
The Freebird has a 5-minute nail the post countdown.
Let's
keep
take
going.
Some calls.
Yes, W X Y Q. It's like clutch for a bunch this weekend.
Hope you didn't forget yet.
58 degrees at 325 here in the Windy City. We've got clear skies and nothing ahead but clear traffic. And
WXYQ.
Also...
And then it's like.
This portion of Freebird is brought to you by Red Lobster.
This portion of Freebird. The next 35 seconds are brought to you by Olive Garden. Olive Garden, come for the breadsticks, stay for the endless salad.
And it has, I think Freebird has posts inside of it. Because there's, they at some point they stop singing and it goes, you know, like, hey, back with us, WXYQ. This song is 2 hours long. I never would have started it if I had known. All right, well, so another episode of Web Comics Weekly in the can.
And well done, and nailed.
And miles all around.
And we nailed the
nailed
post.
Like a post.
We're two for two so far.
We're good. All right, so let's remind everyone where they can find our respective works. Dave Kellett, where can we find you?
You can find Sheldon at SheldonComics.com 7 days a week.
Brad Guigar? Is it Guigar? No, it's Brad Geiger.
It's Gabaha.
You can check out Evil Incorporated at evil-comic.com.
And kicking Chris Straub, where can we find you?
You can find me at starslip.com. You don't need the crisis if you don't want.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's what I was always doing, and then I felt like it was screwing up your stats.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't?
Actually, starslip.com screws up my stats, because then it's just like refers come from there, and I have no idea where they found that.
Oh. And you can find me at pvponline.com 7 days a week.
Thanks for listening.
So thanks for listening.
Thanks,
we'll
everybody.
See you guys next week.
Great job.
Yeah.
Oh. We'll have to do it. We'll have to do it early again next week.
Yeah.
Because we're going to Baltimore.
Oh, right. All right.
So's Brad.
I'm cool on that.
Hey, maybe we can bring the laptop and record a special on the road edition and Skype in Brad. Skype in Dave.
That would be cool.
We'll figure it out. But we will have a show next week. All right, guys.
I got to run and go pick up my wife and go to work, so I'll talk to you guys later.
Oh, we want one more tip. No, I'm just kidding. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. This has been Web Comics Weekly. End of the show.